Good morning, everyone. I want to thank very much the session organizers for giving me the opportunity to share this exciting work with you. So I'm going to talk about the association between household food insecurity and higher blood glucose among Latinos with type 2 diabetes. This work was has been and continues to be funded by the NIH National Center on Minority Health Disparities, and it's an R01 grant, and Julie Wagner and myself are the PIs of this project. I have no conflict of interest to declare, and the data that I'm going to be sharing with you today is related to the baseline assessment of a randomized control trial that we call CALMSD that seeks to assess the impact of stress management sessions on blood glucose control among very disenfranchised Latinos with type 2 diabetes in Hartford. But all the information I'm going to share this morning is based on the 121 participants that were assessed at baseline. For inclusion criteria, they had to be Hartford residents, adults, Latinos who spoke English or Spanish, and who have had been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes for over 6 months. They were recruited from a community diabetes clinic, and they had to be under poor blood glucose control conditions as reflected by an HbA1c above 7. They were excluded from the study if they had a medical instability, bipolar disorder, had attempted suicide, or had been hospitalized for psychiatric conditions in the past 12 months, I should say, or had taken antidepressant for depression accompanied by changes to the regimen within the previous 6 months, or had tested positive for an alcohol problem screen. The operational food security definition is the one developed by the Life Sciences Research Organization in the late 90s and has been fully endorsed in the U.S. Food security exists when there is access to enough food for an active, healthy life. It includes, at a minimum, the ready availability of nutritionally adequate and safe food, and B, an assured ability to acquire acceptable foods in socially acceptable ways. And by default, food insecurity exists whenever the availability of nutritionally adequate and safe foods or the ability to acquire them through socially acceptable means is limited or uncertain. So we assessed household food insecurity using a 5-item version of the U.S. Household Food Security Survey module, which essentially asks the following 5 questions in relationship to the past 12 months, basically tapping the issues related to food not lasting and not having enough to buy more, or not enough resources to eat a healthy and varied food, or if they had to recourse to coping strategies such as cutting the size of meals or skipping meals, eating less than they thought they should, or actually going hungry because of not having enough food to eat. The response options were basically, first of all, dichotomous yes, no, and then a series of questions that were that followed if there was an affirmative response to assess the frequency of occurrence of the food insecurity condition being assessed. This graph shows the prevalence of affirmation to each of the 5 questions included in the scale, and as expected, the more severe household food insecurity items, those related to hunger and actually coping with having not enough amount of food, were affirmed less often. But you can also see that the level of household food insecurity is quite high. Cronbach alpha was 0.87, suggesting an adequate internal validity of the scale. This is just the distribution of the additive score that was assigned to each household based on the number of questions that were affirmed. We have a fairly nice distribution. And in this very disenfranchised population or sample of Latinos with type 2 diabetes, only 33% were food secure, and the proportion of food insecurity as a function of level of severity was pretty equitably distributed from mild to severe food insecurity. So almost one out of every five Latinos in the sample had lived in households with severe food insecurity. In terms of fasting plasma glucose test, 30 milliliters of blood samples were obtained in participants' homes. We needed that amount because many different biomarkers were being assessed under conditions of overnight fasting, and they were transported and processed following standard procedures and assessed at the Yukon Health Center using an enzymatic endpoint reaction method. This is the fasting plasma glucose distribution. You can see that the median was 158, the minimum was 43, and went all the way up to 360. So we had quite a range, but overall, these were definitely Latinos with type 2 diabetes who had very poor glucose control. When we conducted the multivariate linear regression model using as outcome variable fasting plasma glucose, by far the most significant, the strongest predictor was food insecurity category, adjusting for gender, age, financial strain, income, marital status, and education. And when we conducted an analysis of covariance, essentially we found a very nice but sad dose-response relationship between the level of severity of household food insecurity and fasting plasma glucose level. So for among those who were food secure, the mean fasting plasma glucose level was 146 and went up to almost 200 among those with severe food insecurity, again adjusting for key socioeconomic and demographic confounders. What we then did was to identify the quintiles, the cutoff points for the quintiles of the blood glucose distribution, and it turns out that the cutoff point for the top quintile was 200. So that's why we classified the participants as having a blood glucose above 200 or less than 200, that is, if they were in the upper quintile of the distribution or not, and to run a multivariate logistic regression model to assess the adjusted odds ratios. And we also can see through this statistical approach that we have a dose response relationship, although we do lose some statistical power. And when we do it this way, only the severe food insecurity category is strongly statistically significant, associated with being in the upper quintile of the fasting plasma glucose distribution. The odds ratios are quite high, almost 12, and moderate food insecurity was 4.4, which was marginally significant. But if you look at the multivariate linear regression results and these multivariate logistic regression results, the findings are totally consistent with each other. So in conclusion, household food insecurity is an independent risk factor for poor glucose control among Latinos with type 2 diabetes, and we detected a very strong dose-response relationship. This suggests that diabetes clinics and programs should screen for household food insecurity risk, and that food assistance programs should facilitate blood glucose screenings as well. So in other words, we're really calling for a much better integration at the local level of the healthcare and the healthcare systems with the food systems. In terms of biological plausibility, there are both behavioral and metabolic factors that may explain this relationship if confirmed through future intervention studies. When we think about behaviors, Barbara Laraya has very strongly suggested a possibility that household food insecurity is a major stressor, which is a fact, and that as such it induces a stress response that is associated with the pleasure centers of the brain that push individuals to consume foods higher in calories, sugars, and so on. So that there may be a behavioral component related in relationship to the stress response. But also, metabolically speaking, at a more basic level, it is very well known that stress hormones, such as cortisol, have a direct influence on glucose metabolism. So I think these findings provide a lot of food for thought when thinking about mechanistic research as well as applied public health work. I want to thank you for your attention, and if you want to get a preview of the preliminary findings of the actual randomized trial results that was related to a series of stress management sessions to hopefully help improve blood glucose control, I will be doing this presentation this afternoon as part of the session on minority to majority Latino public health education and health programs that starts at 2:30. Thank you very much. Yes, so we have a ton of data, and part of it is, of course, all the anthropometric information, and we still have a lot of more analysis to conduct. But what I can tell you is that the average BMI was 33, so the great majority of these patients with type 2 diabetes are morbidly obese. That is a lovely question, and actually I built a team, and it took me about 10 years of formative research before actually deploying this intervention to fully understand how best to capture the information across different levels of acculturation, including different levels of fluency in English and Spanish, and also very much taking into account the social determinants of health in this community. So we partner extensively with a wonderful community-based organization in Hartford that's called the Hispanic Health Council, and we have really built a very strong team that has a very strong and very high degree of cultural sensitivity. So we have validated our methods, yes. Yes, Ed. Good status in the sense of mental health?
No, in the sense of their diabetic control.
Yeah. So, stress hormones per se have a negative impact on glucose control, and then the ability of people to choose and sustain healthy choices can also be affected by the stress levels based on the neuronal pathways that are related to the pleasure zones in the brain. And obviously, the condition itself, the disease itself, accentuates a problem of poverty and inability for people to have adequate resources to acquire foods. So I would say that the reason we proposed the randomized trial is that it followed the previous randomized trial that we did with community health workers that was mostly based on nutrition, medication adherence, and self-glucose monitoring. And what we discovered while doing that study is over half of our participants had symptoms of clinical depression. And that's what led us to propose the stress management intervention through community health educators as well. Thank you very much.